Welcome to another episode of Tirapore, the show that's been proudly bringing you a fan's perspective of all things Sarze Sharks and Sarze Barracuda since 2018. As always, everything heard on this show is 100% my own personal opinion and is not affiliated with either club or the respective leagues. And now it's time for a brand new edition of Tirapore, the podcast made by a fan for the fans. Welcome one and all to episode 6 of Tirapore season 6. Sorry, I'm still finding the joke of the episode title quite hilarious. Oh. Honestly, those jerseys, when you saw them on Toronto, they really did look like condiments. They really did. Swimmer said that on social media. Spot on. Yeah. So this is going to be a bizarre episode today, because obviously the way the mum's pictures have been structured, because obviously we had the All-Star weekend in Toronto to start the mum, and then of course the Sharks were on a bye break, it kind of meant that we have got less games to talk about. So our structure has got a bit skewed. So let me tell you how it's going to work. So obviously we're going to start the show with the lookbacks, and then we're going to go into our Mill segment, which normally is called the West Watch, but as I mentioned on the last show, the West Watch is going to be sitting out the next two shows. So in this show, we're going to be, our middle segment is going to be looking back on all the action in Toronto at this year's All-Star Weekend. I should point out that segment was recorded before it was announced that we will have an All-Star game in 2026. Okay. I recorded that segment not long after the All-Star Weekend in Toronto. And at the time, we weren't sure we were going to have another All-Star game very soon, because obviously, next year we've got the silly Four Nations tournament, which I will not be watching. And obviously, the year after that, we've got Olympics. That did put the question mark of, are we going to have to wait three years until we get another All-Star Weekend? But no, panic over. Whoo, sigh of relief. There will be an All-Star Weekend very soon. It's on a gap year next year. But that segment, it was recorded long before it was announced. We were going to have an All-Star Weekend in 2026, okay? Let's put that. And obviously, we're going to finish the show, obviously, with Kuda Corner. So it is bizarre. It's bizarre. But hey, you've got to kind of adapt to the situation like this, okay? It's very bizarre. But obviously, it's because of the result of the fact that obviously we had the All-Star Weekend, and then the Sharks went on the bye break. The bye breaks came back this season. Why? God knows. I don't know. Just didn't see the point, really. It's not like in the PWHL, where obviously the players go and do meaningful hockey in international championships. So, so it's going to be a bizarre episode because of the structure, but hey ho, that's how it is. So you're all informed, okay? So go get your snacks, your brews. Now, when we come back, we will get looking back on the month of for the Sarze Sharks, which of course saw the debut of the Cali Finn jerseys. Alright, it's now time to look back on the month of February. This is really weird. This kind of reminds me of back in season 3, which of course obviously was the bubble season, where of course all 31 teams played in one division each and only saw people in their division. So it's kind of giving me the bubble days vibes here. Because we could do the look back all in just one quick section. There's only about 7 games in the month of February. Obviously, you know, you had the All-Star weekend Toronto. And of course, this season, the bye weeks came back. I just don't see the point of the bye weeks. I don't see the point. Okay. I mean, because obviously the result this year means we're going to end the season in the end of April. Normally, when the halfway of the bye week, we still manage to get the season done beginning of April. So I just did not see the need for the bye weeks this year. So it's just obliterated the month of February. Big time. But we'll get down to it. So the love bats are going to be done this month with just one segment, because I need something to talk about. So here we go. Let's get to it. So, Valentine's Day. That feels weird to start a month's pictures in the middle of the month. But like I said, it's a result of the All-Star break and the bye break. So, Valentine's Day at Winnipeg. It's one of those 1-0 with score lines that I don't like. But I need to make a confession here. With PWHL Minnesota also in action at about the same time, I was in split screen mode. This game in Winnipeg started about 12:30 in our time, and PWHL Minnesota's game began 1 a.m. our time here in England. So I was kind of on a split screen. But for what I did see for the Sharks, there was a lot of great promise in the third. It was a tie fought contest. This is the third tightly fought contest with Winnipeg this season. I saw actually a lot of great promise about the whole game, really, but this is the third contest in a row where the score has been so tight against Winnipeg. It really has. That actually says quite a lot about how the Jets are bearing this season, because they are literally one of the teams to watch in the West right now, and yet you see on paper a team on the Sharks right now, you think for Winnipeg those should be easy points in the bag, and yet you haven't been able to blow us out. That says quite a lot. I mean Pittsburgh could blow us out, and yet Pittsburgh are nowhere near where they were back in the heyday. Vancouver literally blazed us. Okay, we've even had Buffalo kick us in the backside, and yet Winnipeg, you can't do it. That says a lot about your season. If you're a strong team and you can't take down a lower side quite comfortably. Anyway, but it says a lot. These three matches have said a lot about the Jets' season right now. There's plenty of scoring opportunities, and the penalty kill looked sharp for the first time in quite a while. Just a shame that obviously Anthony Leclerc's goal just didn't stand, as that could have been the deciding factor in getting a point, at least, or not. So, the next day, probably the 15th, a 6-3 blazing over the Calgary Flames. An unfortunate rebound in the first put the Sharks on the back foot. It really did. As Calgary, they were fast and they were loose with that puck. But I just loved the response here from the Sharks. And I really loved how those first two goals, which obviously spurred the charge, just took Dustin Wolf off guard. Literally. And I was very surprised to see Wolf being called up by the Flames. Obviously, Dustin Wolf, he is an outstanding netminder in the American Hockey League. One of the main reasons why the Wranglers got to where they were last year in their first season, having moved from Stockton. They're not doing as great dishes around us. They are very much in the mix for the playoffs, but they're not as good as they were this time last year. So I kind of feel like this call-up is kind of always hurting the Wranglers here, because obviously playoff positioning in the AHL is very crucial, particularly if you go in the preliminary round, which the Wranglers didn't have to do last year. So I feel like the Flames were almost hurting their kids here by calling up Dustin Wolf, because he could be useful with the Wranglers right now. And those two goals, they really took him off guard. He had to go down low. It took him off guard completely. It really did. And the momentum carried into that third period. You got Fiorentina just let off his leash, scoring twice, 37 seconds apart, in one of, I think, the Sharks' best performances. I'm going so far to say this season. Just absolutely brilliant. Okay, February the 17th, and it's time for the debut of the Cali Finn jerseys. And I will admit, I was proven wrong. They are great. I do like them. Just not sure if I want to have one in the wardrobe. Because you remember the two puppy I did back at the time when I announced I wasn't really that favourable of them, but I did say on the video, you can go watch back my YouTube channel, I did say I was open to be persuaded. Okay? It wasn't like previous bird shows where I thought, nah, hate that. Not going to change my mind or see it on the ice. With this one, I actually was open to persuasion. And they are gorgeous. They really are. They are absolutely gorgeous. And one more thing before we get started on the game. I just want to say one thing. I do not want to see on Twitter. Yes, it's Twitter. I'm not calling it that stupid other thing. It's Twitter. It's like with Channel 4 constantly changing their on-demand service. No, it's still always going to be All 4. Okay? Just like how Channel 5 will always be my... Child's Catch will always be my 5. And just like how BBC will always be BBC iPlayer. ITV's the only one of the broadcasters who's on the man's cat services actually can still go with the name change. So yeah, I have managed to get ITVX off the tongue now. But the others, no, you're still All 4, my 5, and iPlayer. Okay, so I don't want to see on Twitter people saying these jerseys are cursed. Okay, I'm not going to put with any of that BS. All right, okay. Because you can't say a jersey's cursed if we're wearing them for 2 full straight months. Okay? If it was like a stealth jersey that we wore them on one particular day of the week, each week, that's fine. Yeah, I did roll them back in the stealth days. That's fine. But no. You can't say a jersey's cursed if we're constantly wearing it for 2 straight 4 months. You may as well say the above one's a curse. If you go that route, okay? Because you've got to mind, this is something new for the Sharks. We've never really wore a third jersey for a whole month. Never mind 2. Okay. So this is something new. It's bold, exciting. It shows how the organisation has confidence in these jerseys being really well received. And they actually have. A lot of the reaction was really, really good. And of course, people like me who are on the fence are being swayed in favour of them. So yeah, so I do not want to see on Twitter people saying these jerseys are cursed. I will not have it. I will not tolerate that. And I'm not the only one. Brody Brazil has also got that as well. So me and Brody are both like on the same page. We do not want to hear the curse word. Alright? They're not cut, okay? I'm not going to put up with it, alright? Not going to have it. Okay. So on the day itself, Friday the 17th, it was a free for the Sharks, 4 for the Blue Jackets. It's a big night for the Blue Jackets because they literally have got good news and good and even better news. Good news because they got a win, but the better news, of course, they were announced during that on that night that they would be getting next year's Stadium Series. So it's a great night for the Blue Jackets all around, but on and off the ice. But on terms of the game itself, the Kaipin Joseph made a debut, and yet the Sharks started quite loosely, squandering the early lead that was by Anthony Duclair, who scored twice in the game. But the positives here, though, were the special teams. They struck once on their man advantage and allowed Columbus nothing from there. So the Penalty Kills had 2 really strong games, both Winnipeg and here in Columbus. Whilst they did everything they could to give themselves a fighting chance, it just wasn't enough. And that late goal with just 13 seconds in regulation costed Thursday dearly in a game where, like what we saw with Ottawa on the road trip, you could have got something at least, but instead could have won nothing. Yeah. But I think the Ottawa one stings a little bit more than this one, because the Ottawa was for about 5 seconds, it was 30, but still, it's still pretty sticky. Could have been something wrong up him. Okay, February 19th, the last encounter of the year with the Golden Knights. And hey, Vegas can boast they've got a Stanley Cup, but at least we can say we've got third jerseys. Because you don't, Golden Brats, you don't. You don't. The Golden Brats don't have third jerseys anymore. They used to until last season. Okay, so they don't. And you can. And there's no good say to me the third jersey is our old home jersey. No, that does not count. That does not count. Okay, so that does not count. All right. So Vegas, you don't have a third jersey. We do. And it's gorgeous. You see. You just need to see it on the ice, and then your perception changes. I've learned a lot from I've definitely learned my lesson from last year with the old jerseys, absolutely. Of course, I did see them in person myself. So anyway, right, on this game, President's Day, that scoreline just does not reflect the overall performance here from Thursday. The Sharks had great opportunities in those first couple of shifts, including some hitting the post. But an unfortunate breakaway led to the first of three, what was I say, messy goals scored by Vegas. And while things did settle down in the second period, Sharks never able to find a way to get onto the score sheet, and they're kind of lucky that Vegas' power play wasn't firing on all cylinders, because the Sharks really lacked discipline in that game. How they were able to shout shot the Golden Knights. At least there was one positive there to take away from this. At least one thing. Well, two things you count jerseys, but hang on. And we still came so close to getting them away on the February 24th! 4-2 lost to Nashville. It was a case of something was going to give in this game, and it was either going to be our penalty kill or the Predators' constant icings, because oh my god, I actually lost track of how many times Nashville iced the puck. It was quite a lot. I just felt that something was going to give, and unfortunately, it was us, because Nashville did get a power play goal. But what I loved was how the Sharks really generated lots of momentum, particularly in the second period, which normally is not a great period at Kisarze. It carried into the third, and they really, really, really tried to mount a comeback thanks to goals from Mikael Granlund and Pierre Zadina, but it just faltered due to the coach's poor timing of pulling the net binder. It really was. So David Quinn is to blame for the Sharks not getting something here from this game. I wouldn't be surprised if he then went and bitched about it to the media afterwards. Yeah, this is what I don't like about David Quinn. He's all talk and no action. Okay, because he's happy to just when he talks to the media post games, he's very happy to slag his players off. He likes a good old bitch. He's very happy to slag the players off. But I always have to ask, what did you do in the game? What did you do in the game, David Quinn? Did you just stand there? So I'm going to say, so my piece of advice to you, David Quinn, is instead of slagging and bitching the players off, how about once you do your job for which you're handsomely paid? Oh, I can't wait to see the back of him. Mike Greer, grow a pair of fire him! Oh my god. It's pissing me off. It really is. It's absolutely pissing me off. I know, a lot of swearing today. I'm sorry, there'll be explicit warning, but I'm sorry. It's getting to the point now where it's literally just doing my head in. Because in this second half of the season, there actually is promise. There actually, in some of the losses, they're not completely lopsided or no effort. That's what the first half. In the second half, we actually are seeing effort. So it just really makes my blood boil when you have David Quinn, who has got no right to start slagging the players off when what is he doing on that bench? What is he doing? Why is he on the bench? Add to the postcard, please. Ugh. Right. And breathe. On to February the 27th. New Jersey comes to town. And 7-2 loss. Now, this, of course, was Tina Meyer's first game back to the tank since the trade that was made when I actually was in Sarze last year. I can still remember that day on my trip. really well. It was a rainy day. It was raining in San Jose, and the trade was made. I think we kind of were expecting this to happen because he hadn't really been playing in the first two games I was there for against Nashville and Chicago. And of course, Patrick Kane didn't play in the Chicago one either. So we kind of knew when it got to the Chicago game that both Meyer and Kane, for the respective sides, were going. So I think we kind of were expecting it, but it still stings. Even when you know a player's going to go, it always does sting because of how, especially when you have a player like Meyer who's done so much for the team. The heavens literally opened. It was pouring down with buckets of rain. So Saze was in mourning that day. Literally, the heavens spoke for the whole Saze. But yeah, so obviously I was there when that trade happened. So I can still remember that very clearly. So this is his first visit back to the Tang. And New Jersey basically got to repay the favour. Because obviously, remember when we were in New Jersey, we gave them quite a heavy tanking. Well, it was their turn to repay the favour. Despite Nico Sturm striking late in the first, the tie turned in the middle frame as New Jersey scored 7 unanswered goals across the next two periods. Yeah. Essentially embarrassing the Sharks on home turf. With Justin Bailey, though, managed to stop the bleeding on the early compensations in that game where they were... But they were perfect on the penalty kill, though. Give them that. And we're close on both in terms of face-offs and shots on goal as well. So, other factors did quite well. Right, and then February 29th, Leap Year Day. Right, I have to say, Leap Year Day 2024 was a lot better than Leap Year Day 2020 was. Because I remember Leap Year Day 2020, on social media, everyone kept making a fuss, it was a Leap Day. They're like, oh my god, it's a Leap Day! Oh my god, it's a Leap Day! Oh my god, it's a Leap Day! It's a Leap Day! I'm like, calm the fuck down, it's only an extra day. Okay, it's still 24 hours, just an extra day. So I was kind of dreading going to Leap Year Day this year. Are people going to overreact? And actually, no, didn't have that much overreacting from people on social media, so great. Let's see if that holds up in 2028. Anyway, so Leap Year Day, 29th. The Ducks come to town. And it was a 6-4 win for them. Yeah. Now, despite these two teams being kind of reduced to the runt of the Pacific, so obviously remember, you got to remember, back in the day, these two sides were always the two contenders for the Pacific Division crown. Okay? So they were two mighty powerhouses of the Pacific. I know the Kings like to boast, well, we won two cups in the last decade. Yeah, but when were you ever considered favourites to win the division? In fact, have LA ever won the Pacific Division? So, yeah. But back in the day, heyday, it was always either the Sharks or the Ducks favoured to win the Pacific Division. So it's kind of a bit of a shame. And I do really have a soft spot for Anaheim. I know he could have been at Anaheim all those years ago. You never know. But yeah. And I actually have been to Anaheim. Actually, I've been to a Sharks Duck game in Anaheim. So yeah, really great fun. I would love to do that again. Would love to do again, see them again at the Ducks. Yeah, so even though it's a shame to see both these two sides kind of reduced to the bottom of the pile, the runt of the litter, the Pacific. It's kind of nice to show that we can actually score big when we want to. And it got started thanks to Anthony Duclair. But that lead only lasted about 20 seconds, and Anaheim caught us off guard twice here in that first break. First by Arsene right back, and then when they took the lead on the Sharks power play, they really completely took us off guard here. But the Sharks power play itself would eventually strike in the second period. Power plays were just goals were galore in this game. I think we had one point, we had 3 power play goals in a row combined with both teams. It's amazing. Mike Hoffman, he got the back within one. Anaheim would get 2 of their own to give cushion. And well, actually, Duclair scored again to put them back within. And then one. Lentinetta for the Ducks, sealed that the deal, and what was a miserable start to the Calipin jerseys. But hey, it's still young, alright? Don't go saying the curse just yet. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. Right, record of the month, 160. So, no prizes for guessing what the highlight of the month is. It's the win in Calgary. I mean, I can't lay the gauntlet down, did I? I can't lay the gauntlet down. It's so far my favourite performance for the Sharks this season. Absolutely. So, yeah, they did give up the first goal, and it looked like Calgary, with momentum in the general, could have easily just annihilated us and burnt us, but they didn't. We caught their netmile off guard and just rolled our way into sunset. So, yeah, so the Calgary game, that's my highlight of the month. Now, the low point of the month is going to be the New Jersey game. You could argue it should be Vegas, but with the Vegas game, there was actually promise. There were some really good moments. With New Jersey, I mean, you allowed 7.5 goals across 2 periods. That is such, that to me is kind of a worrying sign. That's a really worrying sign. So for me, that is going to be the low point of this month. Okay. So yeah, so this is a bit weird. It's a bit weird because obviously, you know, only 7 games in the month of February, so it wasn't really a point trying to split them into two halves or anything. Yes, it's a bit weird because normally this would then mean end the show. We've had a low point, but it's not. We've still got a lot to go. We've got Miller section coming on next, and obviously we've got Cougar Corner. So Cougar Corner's going to technically finish this episode off. It's a bit strange. It's bizarre. Anyway, there you go. So that's how to look back for 9 February. Coming up next, we're going to be looking back on the All Star Weekend in Toronto. Alright, so normally this would be the part of the show where we go and take a look at what our fellow Western Conference Rob has been doing, but as I mentioned on the last show, the West Watch will be taking a little respite for the next 2 editions, because as of course, it's that time of the year where things ramp up in the National Hockey League, of course, the All-Star Weekend, and then of course, the trade deadline, just a month's time. So the West Watch will not be back for the next 2 editions. For this edition, we get to look back on the All-Star Weekend. It's going to be the last time we can do this for quite a while, isn't it? Oh. I mean, when is the next time we're going to look back on the All-Star Weekend? Season 9? Potentially? Because obviously we know there's not going to be an All-Star Weekend next year because of the Four Nations tournament. The league said they might try and do one before the Milan Cortina Olympics, but I don't see that really being feasible. So I think it probably won't be until 2027. So when we'll be in season 9, that's when I think we'll next have an All-Star Weekend. So I think we're not going to have an All-Star Weekend for the next 3 years, which is a shame because the league finally got things right, you know? They made tweaks to the format this year for both days, which actually, after seeing it in action, I actually thought worked quite well. Obviously, in the lead-up to the All-Star Weekend, I did a couple of two-report bids with Carlton the Bear, and we talked through all those changes. I remember at the time feeling a bit queasy about them. But seeing them play out actually worked really, really, really well. So it's a shame that the league is actually ditching the All-Star Weekend when they finally managed to get the balance right, because I think for me in 15 years, this is probably the first All-Star Weekend where I felt it's been a really close affair, because normally All-Star games are very lopsided, and we didn't get that, particularly in the semi-finals, so it's a bit of a shame how the league is literally ditched the All-Star Weekend for the next 3 years, when they finally got it right. Well, that means no more mascot showdowns until 2027. Oh, my favourite bit of the whole weekend. Oh, anyway, Carlton the Bear did win most valuable mascot, so that tradition holds out. Oh, that means Carlton now is going to overtake Louis for the longest reigning most bomber mascot. Because Louis won in 2020, then of course we didn't have an All-Star Week in 2021 because of COVID. So that meant when the All-Star Week can return in 2022, Louis had a two-year reign as most bomber mascot. So at the very least, Carlton will match Louis. But if they don't do one before the Olympics in 2026, then it'll be 3 years. So Carlton's probably going to be the longest reigning most bomber mascot. Not sure I feel about that. But then again, there could be worse mascots to keep hold that title for a long while. But yeah. So, real shame. Anyway. I've covered my thoughts about that on a little bit. So, check out my YouTube channel for that. But today we're going to look back also because of itself. In Toronto. Now, of course, obviously we had All-Star Thursday this year. Which basically was just captains picking teammates. That's what it was. In fact, I didn't pay attention to the draft. I didn't watch the draft. The only thing I watched from the All-Star Thursday was the PWHL showcase. That's the only thing I watched from NHL All-Star Thursday. And we have done a bonus episode of that for the Purple Brain podcast. You can go listen to that back out, or you can go and watch it on my personal YouTube channel. So we won't cover that because we've already done that. So we'll just go look back on the skills competition and the All-Star games themselves. So let's have a look at the skills competition. Okay, so obviously this year the skills competition had a brand new format, had a bit of a revamp. So you had 12 split players compete over multiple events to determine an overall champion, where of course that champion would win $1 million. So it'd be 8 rounds, and various players would progress based on how many to each round depending on how many points they had got. Try and remember, I think it was the top 8 went on to the 7th round. And then it was the top 6. Yeah, so it was the top 8 got to go to the 7th event, and then the top 6 played in the 8th and final event. Okay, so here we go. So I'm going to run you through the winners in each event. Right, here we go. Okay, so in the fastest skater, you had Colin McDavid reclaim his crown. He recorded a time of 13.408. In the one-timers, the winner of that was Nathan MacKinnon with a score of 23 points. In the passing challenge, the winner of that was Elias Pettersson with a score of 25. Hardest shot was won by Cale Makar with a result of 102.5 miles per hour. Stick handling was won by McDavid with a result of 25.755. Axie shooting won by McDavid with a result of 9.158. The one-on-one was won by William Nylander, who faced netminder Cam Talbot with a score of 9. And the obstacle course was won by McDavid with a time of 40.606. So here are the final standings. So the 4 players who were eliminated after the 6 events were Nikita Kucherov in 12th place with 0.5 points. 11th was Quinn Hughes with 4 points. Leon Draisaitl was 9th. That was a shock. That was a big shock. It was 9th with 4.5. And also Well, joint ninth, I should say, right side was joint ninth with David Pastrnak. Both of them had 4.5. So those four players did not advance to round seven. In round seven, we lost Nikaith McKinnon, who finished eighth with 7 points. And Ian's Pearson also went out after round seven with 10 points. So that led us to top six to go to the eighth and final round. And that was JT Mearn, sixth with 12 points. Fifth place, Matthew Barzell with 30.5. Fourth, William Nylander with 16. Austin Matthews was third with 18. Callum Carr second with 20. And McDavid, McDaddy, winning with 25 points. Brilliant work. Absolutely great work there for Connor David. I was rooting for both Everton's King and Queen during the night. So I was very shocked we lost Leon Draisaitl in the early rounds. He did struggle. He did not have that great of a night. He really didn't. Yeah, so he really struggled. So let's see, guys. Connor David, the 2012 NHL All-Stars Girls champion. Great work for him. So we get on to the games themselves, the All-Star games themselves. So obviously this year, you had the 3-on-3 format combined with the draft format. So you had your captains, so McDavid, Matthews, Hughes and McKinnon. Each of them in the draft selected their players. And our lone All-Star, Tomas Hertl, was drafted on Team McDavid. And I literally was just like, yes! Because I was going to root for Team McDavid regardless of where Hertl went. So I was just like, so the fact he was going to be on the team I was going to be rooting for was just like, result. Just result. Yes. Oh, phew, relief. Yeah. So let's go through the games themselves. Now, I think what's been really great how this year you saw really, really close matches in all three. Okay, the championship game was not as close to score as it could have been. But it's great how this year you've got really, really tight, close, well-fought battles. The All-Star games in the past have always been very, very, very lopsided. Even when we switched to 3-on-3 in 2016 in Nashville, even those were still lopsided. It's supposed to be the best of the best that are going to the All-Star weekend. So you want to see really, really close fought competitions. You don't want it to be so blown out. And yet we've seen it yet. So it was great. The semi-finals, they both went to shootouts. But it's like, yes. Yes. Because we've been waiting for this. We have been waiting to see what happens in this format if the score is tied. We've always known that, it would always go to a shootout. We've never seen it in action. So it's great to finally get to see that in action. And in both semi-finals, was just crazy. Absolutely crazy. Really crazy. Okay, so Team McDavid would go in the first semi-final against Team McKinnon. And Team McDavid had to come behind, but won it 4-3 in the shootout. So here is the scoring periods. Here's the scoring summaries between each period, what I should have said there. So in the first period, you have McKinnon started scoring at 3:24 to make it 1-0 for him. Jenner would tie at 7:58 for Team McDavid. And that's how it would read. So both teams tied at 1-1 the first half. The second half is when all went mad. In the second half, Team McKinnon, retook the lead at 5:51, thanks to Borgstrom. And then 6:45 made it 3-1 deficit, thanks to McKinnon getting his second of the game at 6:45. But Team McDavid would not go down without a fight. At 9:28, Pastrnak gets them back within one. There were just 6 seconds remaining. McDavid! McDaddy ties it. Sends the game past. So here's the scoring. Here's the shootout summary. So, for Team McKinnon, Crosby missed. McDavid, score. That's how round one went. In round two, McKinnon, miss. Draisaitl, missed. And in round three, Pastrnak scores. So, of course... but David, Team of David shot first, so Team McKenna did not need to go to their third shooter. Because obviously they missed on both attempts. So there we go. So Team of David takes it 6-3-4 in the shootout there. So great work. I'll go through the goalie stats. So on Team of David, Swayman made 9 saves from 11 shots, while Georgiev was 9 saves on 10 shots. That's Team McKinnon. Net minus. The Team at David, Herbert made 10 saves from 11 shots, and then Bobrovsky was 8 saves from 10 shots. So Team at David won the first ever to go straight through to the final. Right, so in the second game, it was 6-5 to say it was Team Hughes taking on Team Matthews. Another shootout decider. This was more high scoring. 6-5 it was to Team Matthews. Although given how this was in this AFR, you had one team dominant Canucks players and one team dominant Maple Leafs players. I wouldn't blame you thinking it was Canucks being Maple Leafs. I really wouldn't blame you. Okay, so the first half, it was very early scoring from Team Hughes at 1:19. Kucherov starts the goal fest. And at 2:43, Brinkat ties it with Team Matthews. Team Hughes retakes the lead at 3:32. Thanks to Bratrona. And then they go up. And then obviously DeBrincat gets his second of the period at 5:07 to tie it at 2-2. So then we go to the second half, and that's when it all, like in the first game, that's when it all goes to explosion. So 2:13, Mane makes it 3-2 Matthews. Then at 4:18, it's tie again, thanks to Pettersson. Matthews then retakes the lead at 4:45, thanks to Forsberg. Tkachuk then ties it at 7:02. Hughes then regained the lead at 7:35, thanks to Vyatra getting a second of the game. But Forsberg at 8:08 ties it for Matthews. So that sees it 5-5, and we go to the shootout. So in the shootout, we actually had all three rounds played this time. So in round one, Connor miss, Forsberg miss. In round two, Pettersson miss. Pettersson's round three. Sorry, in round two. Oh my god. In round two, Kucherov miss, Matthews miss. That was round two. Then Pettersson misses in round three, as does Nylander. So we have to go to round four. Miller misses, DeBrincat scores. So DeBrincat getting his hat-trick there in that game to send Team Matthews to the final. Nehmeyer stats on Team Hughes. Demico, 7 saves from 10 shots. Talbot, 4 saves from 6 shots for Team Matthews. Ottenera, 8 saves from 10 shots. Szczerskin, 7 saves from 10 shots. So it was McDavid and Matthews in the final. And it started off quite competitive, but then it kind of then ran away. But I'm pleased to say Hertl got on the board in terms of got on the board. So we'll come to that in a minute. So guys, this is how the final then went down. So Team Matthew scored early at 2:19. Keller gave the 1-0 lead. Jenna ties up Team David at 5:08. Team Matthews retakes the lead at 7:11, thanks to Mana. And they then went 3-1. They then went 3. Yeah, 7:11, Mana's retakes the lead. The 8:08, yeah, the 8:08, it was Pasternak, we tie it up. But 5 seconds later, Matthew scores to retake the lead for his team. That ties it to 3-3. So it was a lot of back and forth in that first period. Leeds trading left, right and centre. Then the second trainer, that was when Team Matthews really took control. And Team had only got one goal in that second frame. Was 6, Forsberg made it 4-3. Then at 4:59, Matthews gets his second of the game for 5-3. 8:09, it's 6-3 thanks to DeBrincat. But then Hurtle But then Tommaso, our Sharks All-Star, gets his team on the board, make it 4-6. So gives him a chance to get back in it, but that would not hold. But as 20 seconds later, 8:54, Barzal puts it beyond any doubt. So Team Matthews, sadly, would win the All-Star game. Goal stats. Herbuck, 7 saves from 10 shots. Roroski, 10 saves from 4 shots. That was Team McDavid. On Team Matthews, Ottinger, 8 saves from 9 shots. Shesterkin, 7 saves from 10 shots. Okay, so there you go. So there goes the Team McDavid and Team Matthews face off in the final. Sadly, it was Team Matthews coming up the victors, but hey, at least Team McDavid got through all the way to the finals, and Tomas Hurtle getting on the board, absolutely amazing. I'll just bring you through the mascot showdown real quickly. So obviously the 13 mascots, because obviously the Rangers don't have one, and the Red Wings don't have a costume mascot. Well, the Red Wings have a mascot, but not in a costume, but not one that's meet and greetable. That's how to put it. So obviously there can be the series of events and competitions pitting the Eastern Conference against the Western Conference. Those include dodgeball, skills competition. Oh yeah, the mascots get their own skills competition, yeah. You had street game, musical chairs. And of course, you also had the NHL mascots have their own little all-star game, which took place at the skills competition, which of course was streamed live on social media. What was going on in that one? That thing has probably the maddest mascot Scott's All-Star game I've seen in a while. I mean, Paul Wildwing got left high and dry. He really did. Sharky did get an assist on Mickey Moose's goal, so go him. It was utter carnage. I think it's towards the end when near Wild Wing's net with Wild Wing in, there was a little scrimmage. All the mascots were clamouring around together, and I didn't know what was going on. Neither Carlson. So Carlson then leaves his net, sees the puck, and then bungs it in the net for a goalie goal. I was like, I mean, this was about 3 a.m. in the morning here in England. And I was like, what is going on? Like, I'm confused. Carl's confused. There is confused. Like, what the? It was madness. Madness. But yeah. I mean, I thought the West did not do great in the Mascots All-Star game last year. But this year, I think took the cookie. Why am I? The Western Conference did win the dodgeball there. That was brilliant work. We shot the Eastern Conference there. That was really great work. Although Victor was no good. He just basically just walking around, just doing nothing. Even at one point, he even held on to the dodgeball. It's like, Victor, throw it! It's like, does Victor not know how to play dodgeball? I think maybe in 2027, whenever the next mascot show is, someone needs to show Big E Green the film Dodgeball, because I've seen it and I know how to play dodgeball. Big E would not have been good on my team in primary school year six, because in year six primary school we'd always play dodgeball on the Fridays. So Big E would be no good on my team. I'd have to get him sent, get him traded or something. Yeah, the West won the dodgeball tournament. The skills competition went to the East. They also then took both the ice and the street hockey game. Yeah, and overall, the Eastern Conference would win that mascot showdown, and Carlton would be named as most popular mascot. Enjoy your reign, my friend, because it sounds like it's going to be quite a lengthy one. Quite a lengthy one indeed. We can't go 3 years without another All-Star game, can we? Surely for the mascot's sake. Come on. Oh, well. I mean, the league did say they want to try and get one in before Milan Cortina, but I don't see how logistically that could be feasible. But we'll see. Because obviously, if next year, during the Four Nations, they announce they're in All-Star game somewhere in 26, but it is fine. We'll have these to see it, but I think it's looking more like it will be till 2027. We know it's getting All-Star Weekend, which is a real shame. A real shame. Particularly for the mascot's sake. It's not every day you get to see them all together. Having fun. And thankfully, responsible fun. Thankfully this year there was no streaking. Thankfully this year my socials was not littered seeing mascots streaking. Thank God for that. They all kept their kits on. Wow. Apart from Harvey. But then again, Harvey's not wore clothes. It's not really going to change now, is he? I mean, how long's Harvey around for? Anyway. But apart from Harvey, there was safely no more streaking. So that is what happened at this year's NHL All-Star Game. And sadly, that's probably the last we're going to be able to do those for quite a while. Oh no! Shame. Shame. Alright then, it's now time for Clue the Corner and, well, yeah. Yeah, let's not beat around the bush. Let's just get straight into it, Amy. February is always a tricky month for the NHL because obviously you have the All-Star Classic weekend. Literally, like, slap bang in the middle of your schedule. It's happened the last few years now. You know, and you might get like 2 or 3 games to start the month, and then you have to then pause for the All-Star Classic. I mean, I don't get why, how it's not done, has done the NHL. You're scheduled to be at the end of the month or the beginning of the month, and you don't have any games played in the few days leading up to it. And also the fact, because obviously we were host this year, that did not help matters either. But anyway, we'll get to it. Obviously, we've covered the NHL Classic as a whole on our bonus shows. You can listen back to that. If we recommend. But we're here today to talk about the month of February in terms of actual games. And we start with a back-to-back against the Abbotsford Canucks. I feel like this should have been where maximum points should have been taken. And I think that's been the story of this month in terms of back-to-backs. That either were split results or failed to get any points whatsoever. Just the first split. So very second, very tight game. Barracuda 2, Canucks 1. And so a great start to the month there. So the Barracuda got 31 saves from Georgi Romanov and were able to hold off Abbotsford 2-1 on Friday night at the Abbotsford Centre. How am I getting good with pronouncing Abbotsford? Am I getting there? I've said it quite a few times, so I thought, oh no, slip of the tongue. Anyway, in the first minute, Romanov made a point blank save on four Barracuda defenseman Nick Cicisi. Cole Castellanos found Nathan Todd driving the net, and Todd directed in a backhander for his 100th AHL point to give Zaza a 1-0 lead at 10:13. Minutes later, 39, former Canucks forward Kyle Rohr made it 2-0 Barracuda as he tipped in a Nikolai Knezov shot from the right half wall, and Romanov finished the frame with 11 stops, and the Barracuda carried a 2-0 lead into the intermission. And second, the Barracuda were outshot 11-6, and each team had a power play each, but the netminders, they just stood tall, and the game remained 2-0 in our favour after 4 minutes. And then in the third, neither team had many chances, but obviously the shutout bid would end up being spoiled. We'll get to that in a minute. But things got interesting when Tanner Kaspik was called for a 4-minute high sticking penalty off a face-off draw. The Barracuda PK held the Canucks to just one shot and held their 2-0 lead until Mark Gatko beat Romanov with a fluky There have been lots of fluky goals going on in the month of February for all my hockey teams, both the Sharks, Barracuda, and PWHL Minnesota. There's been a lot of fluky goals in the month of February. They really have. one or two on at the 16-minute mark. The Canucks would pull then at minor to a Seahawks at 16:56, but the Barracuda would hold off the Canucks for the 2-1 win. So 24 hours later, it was another close game, but unfortunately this time we fell 3-2. The Barracuda jumped out to a 2-0 lead again, also at the first centre, but the Canucks managed to this time find a way back and scored three times, all unanswered in the second, picking up a 3-2 win. So just like Friday, the Barracuda took a 1-0 lead in the first period. Thomas Bordelot slung a point shot on net, and Ethan Carwell tipped it through to open the scoring at 4:55. The Barracuda would then take their 1-0 lead in the intermission as Roger Ronoff made six saves, and the Barracuda killed the only penalty in that opening frame. In the second, the Cuda would go on a pair of power play opportunities, and on their second advantage, Cole Castles would rip it in at a Carroll feed from in between the circles to make it 2-0, and then the Barracuda would allow the Canucks to find their game when they were called for two minors in an 11-second span, and Linus Karlsson would blast a slap shot over the glove of Romanov. That's 12:52. Then for Barracuda defenseman Nick Cistek, would receive a pass in the slot and beat Romanov on the blocker slide to tie it at 2-2 at 8:52. And the Canucks would take their first lead with just 12 seconds in the frame after Barracuda got called for their third penalty of the night, and Max Sasson scored from the low slot as Carlsson fouled him. In the third, the Barracuda failed to tie a score despite beginning the period on the power play, but with four of the 3-2. So the first game back from the All-Star Classic was on February the 9th, continuing this bizarre back-to-back. What is it about Bakersfield wanting to cash in all their air miles? I mean, I've lost count of how many back-to-backs we've had with Bakersfield this season. It's always been either in one bar one night, the other on the next. It's like, does Bakersfield love this? I just don't know if I get it. I mean, it's just so bizarre. And here we are again, another one. Because it was another back-to-back, which starts in one bar and ends in the other. What is up with the Condors? Do other AHL teams have this problem, or is it just us? Is it just us? Anyway, it was an split result again. The first one on the 9th went to overtime. Condors would take that 3-2. So let's see how that fared out. So the Barracuda, impressive shot out shooting here in terms of shots on goal. They outshot them 42-19. But obviously failed in the overtime result at McCarrick Bank Arena. But obviously would take a pet arena. When they after they took a penalty 30 seconds into the overtime, that's what I meant. So interesting to point out, after this loss, the Barracuda have yet to win in overtime this season. They're currently 0-8. So after taking consecutive minors in the first 5 minutes of the game, the Barracuda would fall behind 1-0 when Lane Pedersen handed a pass off to Rafael Leal, and the Condors all-star directed in the feed from just above the crease at 5:49. Despite the sluggish start, the Barracuda would settle down and find a way to tie it at 11:10 when Oscar Lindblom worked around the net and hit a sharp angle shot past Olivier Rodriguez. In the second, the Barracuda put 19 shots on the net but failed to beat Rodrigo. At 12:28, Adam Irén swiped in the go-ahead goal after Cam ripped a shot off the post seconds prior. With time winding down in the third, Artem Gurov managed to funnel a shot past a screen Rodriguez at 57 to tie it, and the Barracuda would finish the period by outshooting the Condors 12-74, but the game would go overtime. In that extra session, I just mentioned the Barracuda got called from a minor 13 seconds in, and on that assuming power play, the Condors would end the game as Lovia won tied in his second of the night. So 24 hours later, we go back to Texas Arena. So the first game at Texas Arena since the All-Star Classic, and it was a 4-2 win for your Barracuda. I should point out this game from the Tempest Lock was a quick pit stop, because after that we went on a free game road trip, which of course included another visit to the Condors to get there on. So this is like a quick pit stop, but well worth a pit stop. 4-2 win. So Nathan Todd notched his first AHL hat trick. He's definitely proving amongst the fandom, he is definitely proving to be somebody who is earning his stripes. I think I've seen a lot of people on social media say, "Oh, where do we stop to get him an NHL contract?" So I think he's the next Barracuda. I think he would like to see step up. A bit like how last year we had Ekman and Borderland, people constantly where they're going to hold up. I think Todd's going to be the next one. He's definitely proving this season. I probably would like it to one day see him in the Sharks jersey, but I think let's just keep the bird picking first, and then we'll put him next to me. When it comes to call-ups, I don't want somebody to be called up because they've had a great start, great season of the AHL, and they get called up majors and they just falter. I mean, we saw it with Magnus Krona early in the year. So I'd rather we could bet they would talk a bit more first, then call them up. Maybe look into it next season. But he's definitely proving his stripes. And he got his first AHL hat trick in this game. The Barracuda also got 31 saves from Georgi Romanov en route to that 40 win over the Condors at Texas Arena in front of roughly about 3,900 fans in attendance for what was Cuda Country Night, presented by Bay Country. In the first, the Barracuda outshot the Condors 17-9, 11:43. Jacob Pettersson gave Sarze a 1-0 lead as he slid in an Ethan Cardwell feed through Jack Campbell's 5-hole. I know that sounds rude, but please don't say you're sniggling. In the second, the Barracuda would take a 2-0 advantage as Todd ripped in a pass from Castles at 10:03. After a neutral zone giveaway, late in the second, the Condors would cut the lead back down to one when Seth Rippins went far down on Roman Love as he pulled the trigger from the right dot. 1:50 into the third, and the Condors levelled the score as tight. 2-0 snapped in a goal from the right wing with the game up for grabs. The Barracuda recaptured its lead when Brendan Coe set up Todd from below the goal line at 16:16. Todd would steal the win and notch his first AHL hat trick at 18:43 with an empty netter. So a great night for the Barracuda and for Nathan Todd. Really is proving his stride, but we'll just hold off calling him up just yet. It's something we can maybe look into next season. Okay, but he's proved to be a star. He really is. Should have been seen in the All-Star Classic, I hope. Okay, so after that pit stop, we then began a free game road trip to the Gulls, Firebirds and the Condors again. So we start on Valentine's Day. All my teams were in play on Valentine's Day this year. The Sharks, Cuda and Peanuts on Arizona. I think it was a mixed bag all round. So Valentine's Day at San Diego, the Barracuda take it by a whopping 6-2 over the Gulls. So it's a season high, 6 goals on Wednesday, taking down San Diego at the Pechanga Arena. The victory was the Barracuda's second in a row, snapping the Gulls' 3-game winning streak. So Kyle Rohr and Thomas Bordelot finished with a game-high 3 points, and Jacob Pettersson and Nikolai Knezov also notched 2 points apiece, and Georgi Romanov got back to a 0.500 record as he made it 19 stops. Just 0.9 seconds into the opening period, the Barracuda were called for a minor penalty, and on the ensuing power play, the goals opened the scoring. Just 1.6 into the game as Olen Zellweger scored from the point. The Barracuda managed to tie the score at 9:42 when Ethan Carver jammed a loose puck past Kale Klang to level the score. With time running down the frame, Carl Castles fed a pass to the low slot, and Nathan Todd directed in the pass to give the Barracuda a 2-1 lead at 19:53, with 7 seconds remaining there. The assist actually extends Castle's point streak to 6 games. And for Todd, he's now 4 goals his last 2 games. As I already mentioned, he's proved to be quite a star in Barracuda. Oh, and he said Teal then, but of course, not really Teal anymore, Barracuda, is it? It's Blackout, Ice and Steel. So Barracuda, you get what I mean. In the second at 4:02, Shakir Mukhtemelin ripped in the team's third goal of the game as he worked to the high slot after San Diego failed to clear it. Just over 10 minutes later, at 14:42, Bortolo busted in on a breakaway and Royal swiped in his shot after it had snuck through Klang, giving the Barracuda what was a 4-2 lead. 6:52 into the third, the Barracuda notched their 5th another goal as Pedersen cashed in on a 3-on-1 pass from Bortolo. The goals would stop the bleeding when Mayhem poked in a loose puck that had snuck past Georgi Romanov, but Pedersen would seal it with his 2nd of the period while the goals had their net empty. So a big win there. Right, on to Coachella Valley. That was February the 15th. Ah, so back-to-back. Grueling back-to-back in here. Even more grueling than the Bakersfield one, because you had to go from San Diego to Coachella Valley. And there's some Hulagi. It's still in California, but it's SoCal. We're, of course, NorCal. Anyway, not a great night. They never are against Coachella. They're really not. The Chair Body Firebirds, they really are showing us this year that they have got unfinished business. So yeah, 4-0 shutout, not pretty, really not pretty. The Barracuda had its 3-game point streak snapped on first night at Actual Arena, the home of next year's NHL Classic, against the Firebirds, as Chris Drieger made 25 saves en route to a 4-0 win. It still surprises me that Chris Drieger is actually in an AHL uniform, because he got picked by the Kraken, I believe for the Panthers in the expansion draft. And I thought all the time he's going to be a starring netminder for the Kraken. And he's not. I don't think we've really seen much of him in the AHL. He's been kind of down to the minors. But he's doing well. He's doing well for the Firebirds. He's doing quite well. But I'm just still a bit surprised given his talent. What do I know about, I don't know, hey? For the veteran netminder, as I just basically mentioned, it was his 2nd consecutive shutout. With that victory, the Firebirds have now collected points in its last 10 games. In the first, Barracuda got outshot 30-6, and at 15:24, the Firebirds opened the scoring as Cole Lynn went backhand to forehand. Which is 16 seconds later, Artem Gnina threw a hit on Andrew Poskinetti, which resulted in Zurev being given a match penalty for a hit to the head. Due to the penalty, the Barracuda were forced to play with 5 defensemen for the rest of the game. In the second, both Magnus Krona and Drieger were outstanding, making multiple high-end saves to keep it at just 1-0 Coachella after 40 mins. But then basically, the floodgates opened, and we got scorched by Fuego. The mascot, not the song. The Firebirds. That joke only makes sense if you've watched Eurovision. That's. They will extend the lead though to just just 1:25 into the third, when Max McCormick was left uncovered in front of the net. And so each team would put 9 shots on net in the period, but the Firebirds would put empty netters from Ryan Winston and Marion Studnick to seal the deal. Right, the last stop on our road trip was at Bakersfield, and it was an almighty 7-3 win over the Condors on February the 17th. Oh yeah, so the Raracuda netted another season high. They broke their last season high to a new season high of 7. And they got 4 power play goals on Saturday night at Mechanics Bank Arena. And and actually it matched the four power goals actually matched a season high for goals in the game, taking down the Bakersfield Condors. With Saturday's win, the Raracuda finished the season series with a 4-3-1-0 record and a 3-0-1-0 mark over the last 4 meetings. So we're starting to pick up well against Bakersfield, because Bakersfield the last year has been quite a tricky franchise to face up against. But I think we're starting to get the best of them now. We really are, which is good. Because given how tough this division is, you've got to try and find the way you can. The 7 goals were the most at Bakersfield in franchise history. Cole Castles finished with a game-high 3 points with his first 3-point game with the Barracuda. And Thomas Wardlow, Jacob Pearson, Scott Sabrin and Kyle Rohr all notched 2 points. On the second power play of the game, the Barracuda broke the ice as Wardlow spotted Castles in the low slot and ripped in a 1-timer at 10:29. The Condors would take their third penalty of the period just 50 seconds later, and on that ensuing power play, Nathan Todd one time the Castle speed in at 11:38. Get back to the 2-0 advantage. After Drake Hagler had scored to cut the lead down to 2-1 on Bakersfield's second power play, Severin went back down the breakaway after Greg McKegg had given the puck away at his own blue line. In the second, the Barracuda continued their tear on the power play when Marcus Niemelainen was given a double minor for high sticking, and whilst on that power play, the Barracuda would score twice. First from Ethan Caldwell, who beat Olivier Rodrigo on the stick side after Pearson sprung here on a breakaway 8:40, and then poked the Castle's wrist up from the point that hit the crossbar and landed behind Rodrigo at 10:37. After giving up 5 goals on 19 shots, his night was done, and he was placed by Jack Campbell after 30 minutes and 7 seconds of action. But that would not stop there. In the third, Pearson would notch his third of the game goal in his last 3 games at 7:42, and then Anthony Vincent would rip tip in his first in the AHL at 12:41 to give the Barracuda a 7-2 lead. Bedino Karnitz made it 7-3 at 13:19, but of course the damage was already done and the points in the bag. Great. So a great way there to kind of end what was a kind of decent road trip, because you technically won more games than you lost, but some might argue, well, it was only 3 games, only a tiny road trip. Anyway, win's a win. Well, in men's sport, where men's hockey is, win's a win. Not so case with the PHL. Right, so we come back home for a 3-game homestand, starting with the Coachella Valley Firebirds on from the 21st. And then the other two are back to back. That's where they are. Starting with February 21st, it was a 5-4 loss to the Firebirds. We're still looking for that first home win against Coachella. We'll add 3 power play goals on Wednesday night at Texas Arena and got edged by 4 by Carolina Firebirds. In the loss, Nathan Todd finished with a goal and a 2 assists. He's now leading the team in goals, 16, and in terms of points, 40 points this season. We've got to keep this kid. We've got to keep him. 320. He could be a future captain one day. 320. I love. I've laid the gauntlet down. Even the Kudu or Sharks, no preference. Anyway, let's get to the game. Let's get to how the game went. We can all sing Nathan Todd's praise, but we've got to get back to the game. It's over here. Okay. 3:28 into the first. The Firebirds jumped out to 1-0 lead when Andrew Porcelisi ripped in his team-leading 9th goal of the year on the power play, and then Max McCormick gave Coachella a 2-0 lead when he beat Magnus Kroger from the tight at 8:04. In its second match of the period, Dracula managed to cut the lead back down to 1 as Carroll directed a rebound in from just off the crease at 9:40. In the second, Arachia waited just 2:21 to level the score in as Todd found Scott celebrating in the slot. 2 minutes later and 5 seconds later on the power play, Todd actually would go firepower on Chris Drieger to give Arachia a 3-2 lead. But after Arachia got called for a minor, Logan Morrison beat Krona on the short side at 9:05 to level that score at 3-3. Arachia were called for a minor again at the end of the second on the power play. Morrison would give back the Firebirds the lead as he directed a Colin feed at 1:54 of the final period. Devin Shaw made it 5-3, 18:13, with an empty netter before Jack Stursklis hit in the Barracuda's 4th goal to make it 5-4, but that would be too little too late. And then we have a back-to-back with the Ballsburg Canucks on the 24th of February. Both disappointing, particularly the first one, the 23rd, because that was an overtime loss, 5-4. It's a shootout loss. Why have I got down overtime? Why does my notes say overtime when it's actually a shootout? Have you just picked my notes? Honestly, I'll just quickly fix my notes because that should say shootout. We were going so well, weren't we, boys and girls? Right, 1 second. Just need to pick my notes. There we go. Right, so it's a shootout, not an overtime loss. Still stings. 5-4. Right. Valkyrie put 44 shots on net on Friday night, Texas Arena, but would ultimately fall 5-4 in a shootout to the Canucks. So they're really getting some shots on goal. The shots could learn from the Barracuda because the Barracuda are really putting a lot of shots on goal compared to the Sharks. So I think the Sharks could learn a thing or two for the Barracuda here. In the defeat, Anthony Benson recorded his first 2-point game of his career and now has 3 points in 3 games since returning to the lineup for the first time since early November. In the first at 5:26, the Canucks opened the scoring when Carl McWard ripped a shot under the right arm of Jordy Ronov. After Abbotsford took 2 minors on the same shift, Thomas Bortolo levelled the scoring at 10:14 during a 5-on-3 power play. Just over 4 minutes later, Tanner Kaspik backhanded off a rebound from the tight to give the Barracuda their first lead. Less than 30 seconds though later, Vasily posted it at one time and John Stevens being score 2-2. With time running down in the first, Jacob Pettersson intercepted the puck at his behind, rushed up the left wing and swung a back post pass to Benson, who directed in the Cuda's first shorthanded goal since the 12th of November, and just the team's third of the season. Woo! Alright. In the second, Ronald was brilliant, making 5 different points blank saves, but at 3:32, Stevens managed to tie the score at 3-3 while on the power play. In the third, even at 3 aside, the Canucks took their lead back as Berit Johansson blasted a shot off the post and in during a delayed penalty at 7:46. The Red Kings then managed to tie the score again when Jackson Neela spun in an airborne puck at 12:46 from just above the crease. As the clear tie, no more goals would be scored in either the third or the overtime period. But I'll just make one note of the overtime. In the overtime period, the Barracuda outshot the Cook 6-1, and Nathan Todd, of course he does, hit the crossbar. But of course, it would go to a shootout. In that shootout, the Canucks would claim the second point when Linus Karlsson scored the only goal in the shootout, and it came in the bottom of the third round. Ooh, a little bit of baseball in that you there. Right, 2 hours later, and sadly, it was 5-2, the loss. So, not as close as the last one was. But they did use a lot of edge in that shootout loss, eh? Right, the Barracuda scored twice on the power play. Yay! Look the positives, look the positives. On Saturday afternoon, an afternoon game, but gave up 3 unanswered goals in the third, and ultimately fell 5-2 to the Canucks at Texas Arena. In that loss, Thomas Bordeleau buried his second goal in as many nights, and Scott Sobering made it goals in 3 straight games. In the first, Barracuda took a penalty just 29 seconds into the game, and on the advantage, Linus Karlsson would go between the legs from atop the crease to give the Canucks a 1-0 lead. At 6:29, the Canucks would jump out to a 2-0 advantage when Sheldon Dreis tipped in a Karlsson beam. Barracuda would cut that down to 1 on its first power play, and Cole Castles spotted Bordeleau on the far side of the net at 12:12. In the second, each team put 10 shots on net, but it remained 2-1. 33 seconds into the third, Sabourin drew a penalty and then scored on that power play at 2:14 to tie the game. But then the floodgates opened. 26 seconds after that goal, the Canucks would take another minor, but would recapture their lead shorthanded as Atirati cashed in at 4:36. And at 14:20, Chase Waters sent it in a point shot, and then Ratti sealed the win with an empty netter at 18:36. Alright, then we finished the month on the road. February 27th, an 8-2 annihilation in Ontario. We got drizzled, literally. The Barracuda fell behind by three goals in that opening period at the Toyota Arena on Tuesday night. Despite managing to cut that back down to 1 early in the second, just could never recover. Also, this morning, 8-2 to the Ontario Reign. Reign forward Sam Fegma. We've got some unfortunate surnames here this month, we're seeing. That's another one. I don't know what you're thinking. Stop it. You know, I'm not good at pronouncing names. You know that by now. We're 6 seasons in. With a game high, 5 points, notching his second hat-trick against the Barracuda this season, and now he's got 11 goals and 5 assists in 6 games against the USA. In the loss, Jack Studnick recorded his second 2-goal game of his career, and now has 4 goals in his last 4 appearances. In the first, on just their second shot, the Reign managed to jump out to 1-0 lead when Nikita Pershlet received a pass between the circles from Sam Hairless after a Barracuda giveaway at 2:13. After the Barracuda were called for a minor penalty, the Reign made it 2-0 when Francesco Finier had the puck go off his skate and in as he charged the back post just as the power play was ending. That's a bad way to give up a goal there. After the Barracuda nearly cut the deficit down to 1, the 3-on-1, the gamer was sprung on a breakaway and beat Georgi Radov under the left arm at 19:10 to complete the 3-goal period. But this is when the tide turned. Yes, it did. Starting with the Barracuda placed for Krona, and found life just 2.3 in that second frame. With Studzlik slid a breakaway pass from Oscar Lindblom through Erik Paulsen's bipole. Don't. Moments later, the Barracudas would go on the power play, and on that shooting advantage, Studnik had scored again to cut the deficit down to just one at 5-12. Unfortunately, that was the closest the Barracudas would ever get, as the Rain refound their aggression and pushed the lead to 4 in the second period. First, Joe Hicketts wrapped in his first in a Rain new jersey at 4-11, and then blasted in a one tire pass crowder on the power play at 8-26. And Charles Hudon snapped in Ontario's 6th of the night, also on the power play, with just 2 seconds left in the period. In the third, the Barracuda would go on the power play and pull Crowder with 11:58 remaining. What a gamble! What a gamble! Wow! What a gamble here! Wow! 11:58. So that's a lot of time still left in the frame. Huge gamble. Just wow. Wow. Okay. The next result. It would be a couple of empty netters. But hey, I love this gamble. 11:58 remaining in the game. Plenty of time on the clock. It's a massive deficit. Why not? I always feel like when it comes to pulling net money, you should always wait till we get to like the thing is, I always say after you've hit the 3 minute mark remaining, so when it gets like into the clock gets into like into the twos, so like maybe 2:50, 2:40, that's when you pull. Okay, that's when you pull. A lot of the coaches in the NHL like to leave it quite late, and it's always really frustrating. Especially when you see, like, maybe with 2:40 already, there's not, you're put in that zone, but you haven't pulled the net minor. Okay. So I really love this gamble. Why not? Go for it. Go for broke. If you get rewarded, great. You spur on some more momentum, and you siphon the hype that Ontario has. If not, well, hey, at least you can say, at the end of the day, you took the risk, okay? We want to see that. It doesn't matter where you are in the standings. It doesn't matter what the scoring is. We want to see teams go for broke sometimes. We just want to see them go for broke. And I felt the Barracuda here, even though it's quite a hefty mountain to climb, they tried to climb it. They tried to climb Everest, but of course, failed. But hey, I'm not going to... have a go at them. I'm not gonna, bash them for it. I'm actually praising them for it because, I know a lot of my fellow teal town citizens would probably say, "Oh, what were you thinking? No, you let them all in. No, it's got way worse." But actually, I'm like, no. So I can see what they're trying to do, and I feel like they should be praised for it. Take the risk. Take the gamble. It may or may not pay off. But hey, at least you can say you had to go for it. So it didn't work. Because at 9:17, Kevin Connaughton would score on the empty netter. And then Vladimir would complete the hat-trick and a 5-point night at 4:27. But hey, I praised them for doing the gamble. Because lots of other teams would not do that. Lots of other teams were in that situation would think, yeah, let's just take our loss and roll the punches. It's too much to just dust it off and focus on the next game. That would be fair do. But no, the Barracuda thought, hey, we may as well. If it works, great. If not, at least because I'm going to go. And I applaud for that. Right, let's finish off February. Back in Coachella, 4-1 loss. They fell behind 3-0 early on Wesley Natural Arena. Never could dig their way out of that hole. Dropping the game 4-1 to the Firebirds. In that loss, Nathan Todd extending his point streak to 6 games with an assist, and Roman Canino picked up his first helper of his career. In the third, Georgi Ionov made multiple high danger saves, but the Firebirds would break the seal on the power play at 30:52 as Cole Lynn directed in a back post speed from Logan Morrison. In the second, Valkyrie would outshoot the Firebirds 49, but Kuchela would extend the lead to 3-0 with a pair of shorthanded goals. Oh, God. First, Ryan Winston notched his teeny birds, and then Cameron Hughes won top show on a breakaway at 9:10. The Valkyrie would end the shutout bid for Kuchela. They broke through 25 seconds in the third when Scott Severin received a pass from Canino and ripped in a quick shot from the low block. But it was too little too late, and the Firebirds scored again just over 4 minutes later as Hughes found the back of the net for the second time in the game after the loss. The Barracuda have now dropped their last 5 in a row. So that would end the month. So it's a bit of a shame because the month actually started quite well. It started great with a win and it ends badly with a loss, but hey ho. The key biggest takeaway though for this month is two things. Special teams need to be improved on. Both power play and the penalty kill. There's something I've also noted with PHL Minnesota as well. So special teams need to work on. That's the one of the takeaway. The other big takeaway is Nathan Todd just literally excelling. He is literally lighting this team on fire. And I will agree with a lot of my fellow Teal Town citizens who are on social media saying, oh, we need to get him an NHL contract. I definitely agree that he should one day be in the NHL in a Sharks uniform. The only thing I'd say is, let's not rush it, okay? There's not much of this season left, okay? So let's just finish this season out, and then maybe it's something we can look into next season. Okay, let's just let him finish this season of Raikou and have a great season. He definitely will be up there for end of the year awards. Absolutely, let him do that, and then let's over the summer reevaluate it and see what do we do. I definitely think he definitely should be in a Sharks uniform, just not yet, because I don't want to be in a situation where he comes up to the Sharks, I mean, I'm having a great year in the Barracuda, and then he falters, we have to send him back down again, okay? So, yeah, but Nathan Todd, he has just been outstanding this month for the Sharks. Definitely future captain one day, absolutely. You've been listening to Cheer Report, the podcast made by a fan for the fans, brought to you by Spotify for Podcasters. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. For all the latest Cheer Report bits, subscribe to my official George Hand YouTube channel. Don't forget, we always would love to hear from our fans. You can email us at cheerreportpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear you, and we could bring out your messages on the show. And while you're at it, why don't you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review? Not only does it help boost our self-esteem, but it also helps new fans find our amazing and wonderful show. Well, until next time, all that means stays, and so I'll leave you now.